This is Irish Illustrated Insider. It's Thursday, November 11th, Notre Dame versus Virginia this week. And I'm Tim Priester with Tim O'Malley and Pete Sampson. We know that Kyle Hamilton is not going to be playing this weekend. Brian Kelly announced it a little bit ago. We don't know about Brennan Armstrong heading into this weekend's game in Virginia.
But, I mean, we've been doing this a long time. How many game time decisions have turned out to be players who are at 100%? Like, zero. And I think that's, we've all been sort of asking Brian Kelly questions about this during the week. It's like, even if you get Brennan Armstrong, you're probably not going to, you're not getting 100% Brennan Armstrong. And Brennan Armstrong, the rusher, you might be getting 0%. He may have to, you know, be more of a pocket passer or at least a behind the line of scrimmage player on Saturday night. And that takes away one of the things that he's great at. And he's great at a lot of things, but that would be a significant change into how Virginia runs its offense.
Yeah, so I wanted to follow up with Kelly, that last question on the press conference about that. You had Ian Book that you had to protect. Now everybody just imagine Ian Book played North Carolina last year and he was unable to run at all or something in that situation. And that's kind of what you're getting. You can't expose Armstrong to getting hit. I'm sure he will be cleared to run in a fourth quarter of a close game on third and goal five, something along those lines. But, you know, you assume they're just going to have to keep somebody extra in protect, and it's going to be Brennan Armstrong's arm trying to beat them. And they can mix in Wildcat with other players.
Yeah, and this is a – I mean, it is a I don't think I'm exaggerating when I say it's a great receiving core. It's deep. It's talented. They're tight end 6'7", 270, and he's a gazelle. I mean, it's a really, really talented group of pass catchers. And if they don't have Brennan Armstrong, it's a much different situation. They don't run it particularly well. Talapapa is really pretty good when you see him. I mean, he's got some burst, but I mean, I don't think he's at 300 yards rushing yet. They just don't run it really well. It's kind of interesting. They really run out of wide splits with their offensive line, and I think it's just an attempt to try to get something going in the running game, and they haven't been able to do it consistently. And we've talked about the defensive side of the football where they're not very good. So, you know, it's going to be, I'm interested to hear what your predictions are at the end of this podcast. Because
yeah, that's true. I was going to say they're
hard to do without knowing exactly what you have with Brennan.
I think you make a good point about the running game though, too. It's like North Carolina wanted to run the ball and Howell's a great compliment to that, but Ty Chandler's a great runner. They could run the ball even if Sam Howell wasn't running the ball. Virginia might not be able to run the ball if Brennan Armstrong's not running the ball.
Right. Not like Chandler. Chandler had 199 yards against them, matching Kyron Williams' output against North Carolina. But no, Talapapa's quick. And they've got, you know, they've been bolstered by, they got a whole bunch of grad transfers or transfers on the offensive side of the ball. And the amazing one to me is Jelani Woods, a 6'7", 270-pound tight end that, I mean, he was ultra productive at Oklahoma State, right?
Yeah.
And
he
I mean, he left there to go to Virginia. That's a little bit surprising how that happened. But they have a receiver from St. Francis, PA, and Henry. He does some things for him. Wicks is really, really good. Darrington is a running back from Harvard. You wouldn't know he's from Harvard. You know, the real key is Katon Thompson, who played quarterback. We'll get into more who the options are at quarterback in the second segment. But I mean, he threw 111 passes for Mississippi State. You look at this guy and you won't think that he's a quarterback. And as much as Notre Dame had difficulty tackling Sam Howell, they're going to have much more difficulty tackling Katon Thompson. He is just Pro Football Focus said he is. What was the quote? The most elusive, the most difficult to tackle. That's not how they said it. They can't bring him down. And so if you thought Notre Dame had trouble with Sam Howell, if Keaton Thompson's at quarterback, and he will be at least in a sense as a Wildcat, they'll definitely employ him as a Wildcat a lot. He's hard to tackle.
I just feel like it's harder to tackle a quarterback running when the first threat is he's passing the ball on a 30-yard strike downfield,
right,
though, too.
Right, but yes.
It's a little bit more of that. But, I mean, then again, Howell did some quarterback power. So, yeah, the point taken. I just think we should reiterate for, like, people that want to hear about Virginia, five guys with over 440, 450 yards receiving on the team. They're the only team in college football that has that. And Notre Dame has two, if you want to think of it that way. Yeah. Five guys over that. So they – that's going to be the problem. It's the first time, I think, North Carolina had a little bit more, but it's the first time it's not one guy to focus on, really.
Yeah, it's I think it's the team that is best equipped to exploit Notre Dame's lack of depth and quality in the secondary, where they have, you know, remember when like North Carolina matched up Josh Downs and Ramon Henderson a couple snaps? Like, I'm not saying that you're going to have a Josh Downs, Ramon Henderson on every snap, but like almost all of Virginia's receivers will have the ability to do that kind of thing.
Yeah, Kelly even said it today. It's like having, it's like Sam Howell having, or how do I put this? Virginia having North Carolina's receivers from last year, or Sam Howell having Virginia's receivers from this year. It's, and that's why, you know, Armstrong's health is so significant, because it just, it changes. As talented as Armstrong is, it's the receiving core that makes him that much more talented. And if you don't have the trigger man doing that, it certainly diminishes what Wicks is really, really good. Kemp is a slot guy. Notre Dame's faced a lot of quality slot guys this year. And then Woods is a component at tight end that is just, you just don't see guys that size that are that athletic. So, you know, we'll see. And that's why I say it's going to be hard. You have to make predictions now. I have to make a prediction here in an afternoon radio commitment that, I just don't really know how you do it without knowing whether Armstrong, not only whether he plays or not, but just, I mean, if he doesn't play, obviously it's significant, but if he does play, how much can he actually do, you know, in the running game? He's been sacked a lot. You know, it's an unusual offensive line because he has been sacked a lot, but I think it's because he just holds on to the football. Because when I watch that offensive line perform, it's a wall, man. They're not very good as pass blockers. They got a they have a 6'10 offensive tackle and a 6'8 offensive tackle.
I believe that they have two receivers who are, I think, both top 10 in college football in terms of like average depth of target. Basically, like how far down the field are you when the ball comes to you? And they're both about 20 yards. I think they're both right at 20 yards. Yeah,
that would probably be Wicks and Henry, I would guess. Definitely Wicks.
And so if you're trying to be more of a vertical offense, you're going to get sacked more because it takes longer.
There you go. That's good.
Right.
Point.
I mean, that's sort of what Cone ran into, but like in a terrible, terrible way. In the month of September, Notre Dame was trying to be more vertical. So he was hanging out on the ball, and then Notre Dame couldn't protect him. You know, Armstrong's running into a similar situation like that sometimes, but obviously he's more mobile. I mean, to me, it's as much as it was critical for Notre Dame's defensive line to win the matchup against Navy, and they absolutely just torched them. This is the game where Notre Dame's defensive line, I think, has to bail out Notre Dame's back seven, which to me, and I've been saying it for the last few podcasts, I think is very, very average. When it comes to playing the pass right now without Kyle Hamilton. So you need Foskey, Jason Adamola, Myron Tagovailoa, Mosa, like all of those guys need to play very, very well on Saturday night.
Yeah, I would agree. And you may need, again, based upon what I've seen from their pass protection, their tackles are so long, you may have to bring some guys from the second level to get that accomplished sometimes. Mm-hmm. I want to wrap up this segment talking about Notre Dame recruiting. 24/7 Sports has Notre Dame's recruiting class that was signed yesterday, and that's combo guard J.J. Starling, center Dom Campbell, and power forward Van Allen Lubin. They have them rated as the number 15 class in the country. If you would have told me 2 months ago that Notre Dame was going to have, maybe more like 3 months ago, that they were going to have the number 15 class in the country, I wouldn't have believed it. J.J. Starling was always at the front and center of their radar. He's ranked the number 32 player in the country, and I don't dispute that. He's really, really good. Combo guard, great shot, ability to penetrate and finish and dish and see the court, really outstanding. And then Van Allen Lubin came on strong here lately, and they landed him. He ended up reducing it pretty much to Clemson and Notre Dame, and his parents are from Haiti. Notre Dame is heavily involved in charitable activities with the country of Haiti, which is constantly getting destroyed by earthquakes and hurricanes, and the fact that his parents were from Haiti, that Notre Dame's involved with them, and Notre Dame has a trainer who just happens to be Haitian and spoke Creole with his parents. And I don't know if Van Allen himself actually speaks Creole, but his parents certainly do. And so they landed him. And then Dom Campbell's listed as a 3-star, but this is I love his film, a fast rising guy, a wide body, 6'8", 6'9" guy that does a lot of real positive things, in the paint offensively. It's a heck of a class. It's really a heck of a class. O'Malley, do we have you back? I was trying to prattle on here until we got O'Malley back to talk about Notre Dame basketball recruiting. But your thoughts on Notre Dame's basketball recruiting class?
What are they doing recruiting? This is something else. 2 years in a row.
Yeah, really good. This outweighs last year, although Wesley's really good in it. We can look back now. The current senior class was a bit overrated. Carmody got hurt. A bit overrated, like in terms of the depth of talent of a guy like Goodwin. But this is legit, led by Starling.
It is, and it's, you can tell when Mike Bray says they will play as freshmen, and it's not only because they absolutely have to. I mean, he'll have some guys coming back.
Yeah, next year, I don't know that they're probably not going to have to, because Ryan and Wirtz and maybe Leshefsky is the key, whether he comes back or not. If he doesn't come back, Campbell and Lubin absolutely are playing right away.
Well, yeah, and I think they'll play anyway, just becoming the complementary pieces to Leshefsky. If Leshefsky comes back, it's because they have plans for him to kind of have I think he will have had a good year if he comes back. Does that make sense?
How so?
Well, in that he's not going to the NBA.
No, but he could probably go to Europe and play for a long time, and he could do that next year.
I think so too, but I think he could do that after maybe having another really good year at Notre Dame and they make a kind of a run situation. If you're talking Leshefsky into something, it might be like, we could have something really good next year. We're jumping far ahead. Leshefsky hasn't had a good year yet so far. But it's certainly a surprise from you never thought there was going to be another good recruiting class under Mike Bray, right?
You're right. And I'm talking about Leshefsky. I mean, let's be real here. I don't know that he's ever an NBA player. I don't know that he has the demeanor to be an NBA player. He's a 6'10 shooter is valuable in the NBA all the time, but I don't know that he quite has the makeup and demeanor of an NBA player. So whatever, one step at a time. They open Saturday against Cal State Northridge, and let's see if they can get in the NCAA tournament. I said it last podcast, if this team isn't in the NCAA tournament, it's criminal.
Plus they have, with Maui and a couple playing 3 games there, you like to see them obviously make a run. And Kentucky, you get to know a lot about them. We're going to know a lot about them. And Illinois, for the ACC Big Ten. You get to know a lot about them early, and it will be the right type of preparation for the ACC. Last year was kind of silly. But he thought they'd be a little better, I think, last year when he set that schedule up.
Yeah. All right, coming up, segment 2, Burning Up the Boards.
Looking for a gift for the Notre Dame fan on your holiday shopping list? Help them commemorate their first Notre Dame game or loyalty to the Fighting Irish with a Notre Dame Football Heritage Project certificate. Your donation, $5 minimum, will help the Ara Parseghian Medical Research Fund and the Notre Dame Galavan Journalism Program. Visit ndcertificate.com to learn more.
Segment 2, Burning Up the Boards. Start with a question from a familiar name, Terry Benedict. After North Carolina, Brian Kelly said you can't stop everything with that offense. I would think Virginia is similar offensively. What will Notre Dame give up this weekend that will drive fans crazy? Maybe we should like just be prepared for these possibilities so you're not driven crazy.
Yeah.
Because, if they have Armstrong, there's going to be yards gained here against any defense.
I think there will be, let's say there will be 4. This will be, I'm going to, intrude on O'Malley's over-under territory. Over-under 4 of Virginia converting 3rd and 10 or more via the pass.
You went where I was going to go, that the third downs you should stop. This is all assumed. Everything we say assumes Armstrong until we talk about something without Armstrong, right? But third downs you should stop. They throw one in there that other quarterbacks have not is something I get used to. The caveat there is, you know, when it's third and eight and he's not taking off running, I wouldn't think maybe he's healthy enough or just physically, mentally tough enough to he's going to run on third and eight. You know what I mean? Like he sees it open up. I can go get 9 yards and get to the ground. That's going to be a balancing act for him that I think is going to be fascinating. That's kind of, I guess Brian Kelly wasn't going to answer my question directly because it goes to strategy without me thinking that. Want to know, like, how do you prepare for a quarterback that's a great runner that really shouldn't be running? And you'll know within a quarter if he's going to run, a half a quarter if he's going to run, right? Because you're going to give him a lane at some point, and when he doesn't take it or he just shies away from it, then you know he's not himself.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, Virginia is number one in the country in 20-yard plus runs or plays. They have 76. That's a bunch, man. That's a lot. And then in terms of 30-yard plays, they're 11th with 28. One thing, you know, they do have the wide splits with their offensive line. So Talapapa's going to – that might drive people crazy that their running back snaps one off just because you're going to drop 7 and 8 frequently. And because of their wider splits, theoretically, there are opportunities for him to gash that a little bit. But
It's an interesting situation. You say they're going to gash you a little bit. Like Drew White's got to play less, right? As much as I wrote it, I mean, I incredibly admire his toughness and his dedication to everything.
Well, when you you've got a guy like Bo Bauer, you would think that there would be a trust factor at this stage with Bo Bauer and your other guy with, you know, he comes into the interview the other day. He didn't have the brace on the right shoulder, but he still had the brace on the left knee. He's got some balance now. He got the knee injury to balance him out with the shoulder with the labrum.
Yeah.
I was just going to say Bo Bauer, watching the North Carolina game back, I don't think he played particularly well. And I do wonder, and they did this late in the game, like Jack Kaiser became sort of the dime linebacker. Mm-hmm. If that is a better place
I think it is.
For him defensively.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it is. So be prepared for the 76 plays of 20 yards. I mean, that's about what they've played 9 games. So 7 of those a game, 7 or 8 of them. That's a bunch, man. That's a bunch.
Irish from A2, how do you defend Brendan Armstrong? What would you try to take away first, the run or the pass? And this has obviously changed a bit, but I think we have some alternate answers too.
First of all, I don't say this with a 100% certainty because I haven't seen every snap that Virginia has run, but North Carolina has, let's just say Armstrong was healthy. Even if he were healthy, North Carolina has more design runs for Sam Howell than Virginia has design runs for Brendan Armstrong.
Yeah, I just think he's he turns a lot of good stuff. He turns a lot of something into nothing into something.
Exactly.
Very well,
exactly. That's more likely with him than I think Howell were. You know, Howell is more quarterback draws and read option design runs and stuff like that. But he isn't completely healthy, so he isn't going to run. Brian Kelly talked about what they did with Ian Book when he had the lacerated. What was it?
Kidney.
It was. Going to say liver. That was a Jim McMahon from way.
Yeah, that's a real injury right there.
Yeah. Lacerated kidney. You can quote try to take away the pass, but the only way you're really going to take away the pass is if you get a pass rush.
Yeah, exactly. Pete's been talking about it. I mean, Notre Dame is without their number one pass defender. I know they're without their number one pass defender against USC and North Carolina, but our point has been this is going to be spread around in a way that we have not seen yet this year. I mean, I think it's going to be frustrating that you're going to see Houston Griffith one-on-one. I mean, you're going to see Houston Griffith one-on-one. You're going to see DJ Brown one-on-one. I trust DJ Brown more, but I don't trust DJ Brown to the point of I'm happy to have him out there against a healthy Armstrong, right?
Yeah. And USC had one real quality wideout in North Carolina.
Yeah, you can game plan for
one
it.
Real quality wideout.
So Dontavian Wicks, go ahead, Pete.
I was going to say, imagine having to do a game plan for Drake London and Josh Downs at the same time.
Right. Right.
Maybe not at that level, but not entirely far away.
You know, or London and Kemp or Downs and Wicks. And it goes deeper than that because they have a 6'7", 270-pound tight end who's not just a big guy out there, you know, crashing around. He's wide receiver like. And then here we go. I know we're going to be accused again of overplaying the opponent, but when you see Keaton Thompson as well, you're going to see how difficult he is to bring down.
Yeah, just Dontavian Wicks is at 23 yards a catch.
Yeah, there you go.
It's 5 yards more per catch than anyone else in the top 10. And interestingly enough, Notre Dame this will be the fourth guy in the top 10 in terms of total receptions that Notre Dame plays this year. That's nuts.
You know how people always say, I hope he plays because we want to get them at their best. I'm not saying that this week about Brent Armstrong. No, I'm not. Somebody else can say that. I'm not going to say that. Question from JJ Allwine. Are the 2022 starting safeties on the current roster? And if they are, is that the weak point of next year's team?
I think it's the weak point of next year's team. I think DJ Brown will start next year on Notre Dame. Don't you guys?
I think grad transfers are definitely in order here, at least one. Yeah. And I think you should get two.
I'm with you. I think one is guaranteed, and I think you should get two. But DJ Brown's going to have a leg up to start just with everything. He's a solid backup safety that would be returning as a starter. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So you got to get two guys way better than him. Yeah. Yeah. The answer is yes, no. Yeah.
Yeah. Next year's starting safeties are not on the team. Only one of them is.
Maybe, you know, I guess I'm kind of looking at Xavier Watts and saying, okay, this is a really great athlete who has a background as a safety, not just as a receiver coming in. And, I don't want to base it upon what he did against a triple option team, but you sure liked his aggressiveness and his ability to get from point A to point B. And he's a good study. He's got a whole year to do it. You know, maybe he emerges as a starter, but they've got to go into the grad transfer, the transfer portal, and get at least one safety.
Right. And it could work out that they do have a 1A and 1B like Marcus Freeman likes. Now, every time he says we want 1A and 1B, that means you don't have a Kyle Hamilton or a Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, and he acknowledged that. But if Xavier Watts could support another safety, and if DJ Brown could support another safety, or if a safety could support Xavier Watts, you know, if you could find a way for these guys to support each other and have four decent safeties, I think then it's not the weak point anymore, because you can do a lot of stuff with guys that are solid on the back line at safety. Think of it this year. They haven't been totally exposed this year, and they have not had Kyle Hamilton for, I guess now, maybe doesn't count, but you know,
something else. Something else to consider is Clarence Lewis at safety.
Yeah, I'd love to see him.
Have you heard?
No, I saw it on the board, and I was mad I didn't think of it. So I congratulated the person.
Pete, have you heard about that?
I have not. It's almost you're in a similar boat where, like, well, who are your starting corners? Like, they have more corners than they have safeties, but it's not like they have 10 corners and one safety.
No, I agree. I do believe that there are some legs to. There's some truth to the possibility of Lewis ending up at safety. So that would help that situation. And then, you know, so now you have to bring Bracy back. You know, Kari G is a really physically talented guy that could be in the equation at safety, although we haven't heard any of that possibility, you know, this year. KJ Wallace, he's in his third year in a program. I'm not sure that how much progress he's made there.
There's some transfers coming in. Leaving too. We have that question. Okay. Yeah.
We have hours and hours and hours of talking about the safety position next year.
Yeah. It's the inside linebacker from 2000. And was that 2019, right? Who's going to play inside linebacker?
Yeah. Maybe we could give another, it'd be the offensive line. Give me your starting offensive line in March.
That'll be more fun this time around.
Yeah.
Pin and Alton Fisher.
Pin and Poll asks, with Avery Davis out for the remainder of the season, what formations and personnel grouping should we expect to see more of down the stretch?
I don't think that they're going to change a whole lot, honestly. I think that they will roll with 11 personnel. That's what they're in most of the time. You know, maybe you turn the dial a little bit towards 12 personnel, but I mean, for how much time we spent on 21 personnel, I think we overtalked that as a potential part of the offense. It just has not clicked. I don't think they're going to suddenly go to it now.
You know, the only issue I have with that is I love the Lorenzo Styles playing slot. Avery Davis allowed you to run out of three wide more so than Lorenzo Styles will as a freshman blocker. Mm-hmm. I think you just rely on Davis. So I don't love going to 12. I think George Takacs has improved all season as a blocker, but it still doesn't threaten the defenses enough. You know, I mean, they could probably absolutely muckle Stanford if they want to use 12 personnel the entire game to the point where they would quit in the third quarter. But I do think you just need some more in this game, especially you need points. And I think Styles and three guys out there is pretty important.
Yeah. One of the issues with Styles is he moves, number one, moves to a different position is work volume. You know, you don't want him taking 60 snaps, but Brian Kelly has said from the very beginning that his work volume is very good. So, I mean, just the one thing that I would add is I think that we're going to see Williams and Tyree in the slot more, which is one way to deal with personnel groupings, one way to deal with work volume for Styles. You know, does Salerno actually get some snaps? I wouldn't say it's out of the realm of possibility.
He got in there against North Carolina.
Yeah, but that was just, you know, I mean, I don't know how many snaps that actually was. But for me, it would be Tyree Williams in the slot. That would deal with, you know, Styles not having to pile up too many snaps and just giving you a little bit more versatility.
And I love the idea. I don't know if we'll see more than four or five snaps of it, but I love the idea of Colsey at W and Austin at X with Styles in the slot at times, like Brian Kelly referenced. That sounds like too much fun August camp, three writers sitting around trying to make an offense. But Brian Kelly said it, so I'm proud of him.
I mean, you might with what has happened at the position with injuries, and I don't, you know, I don't want to exclude Lenzer from the equation, but Colsey, Austin, Styles is probably your three most talented receivers, you know, on the field at once that are available to you right now.
Next from M. Malham, what's the feeling inside the Goog about Tyler Buckner being an upper echelon college quarterback? Are they confident he will turn into what they thought of him as a recruit?
Pete, you want to go ahead and answer that first?
Yes. Yeah. I think that they're incredibly confident about where that's going, which is not to say that they always were. And I wrote about this today, like Buckner was sort of steered in like, could you talk to Ian Book or Ian, could you talk to Tyler about this? Because in January and February, it didn't look right.
There was a little pause in January and February.
Yeah. And the staff was concerned like, all right, this isn't what we thought. Now it's what they thought. I've said this a bunch on this podcast, like Notre Dame's two goals for the season. One, win 10 games. Two, get to a point where you know Tyler Buckner is the guy moving forward. And I think that they're on the verge of checking both of those boxes.
Yeah, I think that, well, certainly he's proven that he's everything they could have hoped for in the running game, both in terms of quickness to get around the edge. He had that third and one last Saturday. He had that third and one where it doesn't look like it's going to work. And he's just so damn quick to the edge that it's a first down and you keep moving the chains. And then the ability, the power to be able to run through some things. So, I mean, I think that part is all in order. Initially when he got there, it was like, okay, is he everything we thought he was in the passing game? And I still think he has a lot to prove there. When he's tight and over the top, he's pretty damn good and much more accurate that way. Now there's a lot that he needs to learn and see. And it was really enlightening talking to him Tuesday because how about that? Did they trot out? I mean, they trot out.
They've done a great job of bringing out.
Yeah. I mean, Buckner, Alt, and Styles within the last couple of weeks. And I mean, they couldn't be any more impressive in their ability to handle the questions, to listen to what you're saying and answer. Yeah. You know, I mean, they've all been very, very impressive in that regard. So, so in terms of, you know, intelligence and running ability and promise in the passing game, next year we're going to see all the blemishes because he's playing all the time. And so then you'll say, okay, well, maybe he isn't everything we thought he was. Well, yeah, that's because players make good players and players are forced to make bad plays too. But I think that he has a lot of the ingredients that they're looking for.
I have a current blemish for you, and I really like Tyler Buchner. He completed his first pass on third down this past week to Kevin Austin.
How many opportunities?
I looked
how many other on, how many on other third, ones? Three picks.
Yeah. 0 of 7.
Oh, wow.
0 of 7, 3 picks.
Oh, wow.
So obvious passing situation is what they call it. That means the defense was preparing for Tyler Buchner to pass. And that's the first time he completed one. So that really doesn't have a lot to do with next year, but it does have to do with now when you say, why isn't Tyler Buchner just taking over at quarterback? It's obvious passes. Yeah, it's something I was doing the film review. I'm like, I cannot remember him completing a third down pass. And sure enough, there was a drop. So he would be one of, there was a drop, but that's what he'll be working on for the next 9 months.
Right. So, and I don't think that's startling enough when you add everything else up to think that he's not going to be capable of third down moving forward, but
more of a, what if Jack Cohn gets hurt on the third play against Virginia, get ready for some third down issues if it's not third and four.
Yeah. Great stat. It's startling enough to give the staff credit for sticking with him. I would think that most staffs, including this one and other years, would be like, all right, that's enough. Let's check back on this in spring.
Yeah. Question from BWAC29. In terms of red zone offense, is there something that we as fans are missing in terms of how opposing defenses cover Michael Mayer in the red zone? It seems like he doesn't get nearly enough targets near the goal line. And then on a related note, is Kevin Baughman healthy? Let's just go ahead and answer that. Yeah, he was in – he dressed last week and is – fit and ready to go. I don't know how much they're going to use him at this stage with them using limited tight ends and Takis being established with Mayer, but he's back in uniform and ready to go. So I think, go ahead, Tim.
On Baumann, I think Baumann is healthy enough where if he was Michael Mayer, he'd be playing and getting the ball, but he was a guy that did not have catches yet, and he's a second and a half string tight end. So they don't get him in there. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But you got to give these.
I think he was well behind Takis at the end of it. Like we caught talking to people in the group. We caught Baumann on some really good days in August. Mm-hmm. That wasn't every day.
That's kind of what I suspected at the time, but we don't get many opportunities to report on him, and he was great.
Yeah.
And so you report that he was great on this particular day. If I could jump in here, because this was a question I asked two red zone questions of Brian Kelly on Monday, one about offense, one about defense, one about offense being now number four in the country and they're really, really good at it. And it's still being a problem offensively. And he talked about, he said these things when I was asking about the defense and what they did. And he said, they've done a great job of not giving customary looks, I guess, to, for pre-snap reads. And he used a lot of, football terminology about, bracketing a guy, and they use man and they look like they're in zone. They use zone and they look like they're in man. They double zone. They've taken away the fade by showing them one thing and then gaining outside leverage, after the snap of the football. So these are all things that Michael Mayer has to deal with, I would imagine. I'm sure that they, and I can't answer for sure how much defenses have done this, but certainly they're bracketing him when they get into the shadow of the goal line.
Hey, I mean, he's their best player, so they put two people on him. I mean, that's, I think the crux of it. I mean, we've got a long way from the Toledo game where they singled him up with a linebacker with an empty space
win the
in
game.
The middle of the field. Like,
to win the game. Yeah.
I was almost offended by Toledo's defensive choices. Other people have been way smarter than that dealing with Mayer. So it, they're like in the red zone, they know Notre Dame wants to go to him because why wouldn't you? And then you put two guys on him, you make somebody else beat you. And Brian Kelly said this preseason, I think more than once, if we don't have somebody other than Mayer and Austin, we're really going to struggle. And there have been games where they have not had somebody other than Mayer and Austin and they've struggled.
They kind of don't still. I mean, Kyron Williams is the other one down for making. Yeah. You don't look to Braden Lindsey for catches in the red zone, although he made a really nice catch on that 2-point conversion. Mm-hmm. I think Styles can become that. And Avery Davis, they look to that. Yep. Avery Davis was underrated. I mean, we all know, we all think Lorenzo Styles is going to be a fantastic player and is already a good player, but Davis was a security blanket down there too. I wouldn't expect the red zone offense to get better without Avery Davis.
No, yeah, I don't get caught up in how many touchdown passes this guy has. As long as you're being efficient in the red zone, well, they're not being efficient in the red zone. Yeah. So then it becomes, then it creates a question from BWAC 29 about why aren't they getting the ball more to Michael Mayer? And I mean, obviously they're doing things with guys over the top to defend him. And it does not matter who gets in the end zone in the red zone, but it's not happening. So they're running the football into the end zone more than they were in the first month of the season, which is a huge step forward, but it still is a problem when you're, what was the stat? In the 22 games that Tommy Rees has been the offensive coordinator, they have scored more than 50% of the time in the red zone in just half of those games, 11 games. And that's just, it's just not good enough. It's just not good enough.
Tim, you could be concerned about how many touchdowns somebody has. If Michael Mayer was the fourth tight end since you've been covering Notre Dame, you predicted would beat the Ken McAfee record for touchdowns. Then you would care. I'm never doing it again.
You're invested in a way that I'm not invested in.
Kyle Rudolph, Tyler Eifert, Cole Kmet, and Michael Mayer. And they can't get there, for crying out loud. That's just over. It's depressing. Philip_G, who is also known somehow as Jim_Booney. Don't know what happened here. What happens first?
Because he sent this. He sent this one in from his phone.
And I got you.
Yeah.
What is Instagram account? What happens first? A Logan Diggs 100-yard game or a Deion Colsey touchdown?
Now, everybody, not everybody, a bunch of people on our message board jumped in on this, and I disagree. What are your thoughts?
I think Diggs.
I think it's going to be Diggs as well.
I think Diggs is happening this week.
Now think about this. How many touches does Logan Diggs need in order to get over 100 yards? And how many touches does Deion Colsey score a touchdown? You know what I'm saying?
I think it's happening this week.
It just takes one pass to Deion Colsey.
Yeah. Mathematically, yes. Kyren Williams playing some slot gets Diggs six more carries. They could both go over 100 yards rushing if Notre Dame decides that's the plan of attack against Virginia. Well,
Diggs is getting more opportunities for touches now. But
I feel like neither are going to happen this year.
That could very well be. That's why I think Colsey, it just takes one pass. I think it's more likely, from an odds standpoint, it just takes one pass.
And Colsey's moved up in the
right, and now he's going. Now he's going to play more. So theoretically, that's second time he used theoretically. He will probably get more targets than he has been.
JRick68. If Notre Dame had completed a fourth quarter comeback for a tight win against Cincinnati and found themselves 9-0, where do you think the College Football Playoff Committee would have had the Irish ranked at this point? That would have been a pretty fun fourth quarter, I might add, to watch.
Yeah, that would have been wild. Drew Pine definitely would have started at Virginia Tech.
That's right. The whole thing would be different, wouldn't it?
Okay, well, let's see. They wouldn't be ahead of Georgia and Alabama, even with the Alabama loss.
Maybe third.
I don't think they would be ahead of Oregon.
Would they be ahead of Ohio State?
Yeah, you'd think they'd split. Or Ohio State lost at home. Ohio State has not looked great, other than when they started murdering some people right after the loss. I think Notre Dame would be third. I accept Pete's answer as fourth. I don't think they'd be fifth.
I'm torn between fourth and fifth, because it's like, I think when fans do this, they just look at it as like, well, I mean, Oklahoma really struggled at Kansas. And then when we do this, we're like, well, what about Notre Dame struggling at Florida State and Toledo? Those teams are not good. That still matters. But Notre Dame is playing better now than it was earlier in the year. And I do think people notice if you watch the Dog and Pony Show on ESPN every Tuesday night with the rankings, like when Notre Dame comes up, it's Notre Dame playing well. It's Notre Dame, the team that handled its business last weekend. So I think Notre Dame is on the way up there in terms of national perception.
I haven't had an opportunity to pontificate on the ranking of Michigan ahead of Michigan State on the podcast.
Let's use it right now.
I wrote about it in today's Thursday Thoughts. I think when you do that, you're playing God. We're not paying. When we stop paying attention to scores of head to head that happened a week earlier, you can't. Is Michigan better than Michigan State? I believe that that's absolutely correct. But you can't use that criteria when they just played and Michigan blew a 16-point lead in the fourth quarter. Was there a call or two that went against him that maybe shouldn't have? I agree with that. But I understand like AP voters doing this because those are independent voters and they're not gathered in a room like a committee. Once the committee starts making decisions like this, then save your money on scoreboard. No, your scoreboards can just be video boards. You don't need to put scores on them because I think you're just going too far then.
You know, you make a good point about the voter situation because this committee is supposed to be really good at evaluating all these things. Like that is their job. They watch everything. In fairness, like how many AP voters are there? 40? I'm just going to say 40. Is it 60? There's more. Whatever. Not every AP voter takes the same amount of care.
They
to go
can't.
Down and do
they
their
can't.
Rankings.
They got a team to cover.
Some are probably great at it. Some probably spend a two-hour chunk Sunday going over everything and have charts and have everything. And some probably look and see the score, who won, and they don't like that Notre Dame barely beat Toledo in week 10. And they just vote. But the committee cannot be like that.
How do you guys feel about specifically Michigan being ahead of Michigan State?
I don't understand it. I'm not all that worked up about it because it's 6th and 7th on November 11th. Here we are. And I also like Michigan State should be out of Michigan. But I would say, I think you use the word setting a precedent or the phrase setting a precedent in your Thursday Thoughts. Like I disagree with that because the committee changes every year. And like, you see these criteria change all the time. So it's like, it will change again.
Is that not the first time that actually has happened?
I don't know.
In a recent game, it's got to be.
You know, it's certainly the first time I can remember it happening. I don't know what happened with. Wish I had this with Baylor and TCU, and God, what year was that? 2015, where like TCU dropped from 4th to 7th despite winning its final game like 52-3.
But that's when I say precedent, that's not the same thing.
Yeah, no, what I'm saying is like nothing, the committee is not setting any precedents about anything because the committee changes every year. And a couple of years from now, it's going to be a 12 team playoff anyway. So, like, they change the criteria almost annually about what they emphasize. So I would hope after this year they would emphasize head-to-head more because this situation is stupid.
Tim. It just happened. Like,
they just played the game.
It just happened. Like, I want to go back to the Notre Dame-Michigan thing that was always so ridiculous because Notre Dame was undefeated. And people were saying, well, if Michigan played again, then beat them. Okay, great. If Notre Dame had one loss, I would accept your argument. Undefeated. Like, I would accept the argument that Michigan, I don't think it's true, but people that said Michigan is better than Notre Dame before that Syracuse game, remember that Notre Dame wasn't playing great. Syracuse was kind of the one that hammered it home. You could make the argument Michigan was playing better than Notre Dame before Notre Dame killed Syracuse and Michigan lost by 50 to Ohio State. But you couldn't make the argument that one team didn't have a loss and one team was undefeated. Like that was
exactly.
And this right. just, and but this just happened. Like if so Michigan game one, if Michigan State comes back to beat Michigan and everything else has happened since, and you can say, this is tough. I mean, you know, it happened 8 weeks ago, 9 weeks ago. They literally are the same teams right now.
You guys are like Cincinnati cannot drop below Notre Dame if they lose a game then?
Well, okay. Therein lies the problem because like we're talking about
it'll be 7 weeks ago after going into this week, right? 6 weeks ago?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it could be 7 weeks, about 5 weeks from now for the Michigan State dynamic. Does that?
But it's,
I mean,
it's happened.
A deal breaker, 2 weeks.
I don't know, but it's happened now. That's the point. It just happened. These committee just watched that game.
Yeah. It's dumb. I don't like it, I'm just saying, like, if how what's the timeline?
Well, because Oregon lost, yeah, no, because Oregon lost to Stanford. That's what's at issue here.
And I mean, Stanford's, I can give you off that.
And Oregon is still ahead of Ohio State.
Right, but yeah, that's amazing. Now, here's the thing. I mean, Notre Dame's a Power Five team that will play 10 Power Five programs. Cincinnati is a Group of Five team that will play two. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I just made the argument.
Notre Dame won't play. What, they played one ranked team, Wisconsin, and Purdue's in there for now until they potentially lose to Ohio State.
But, I know it's not easy, and I stress by saying there have been 28 teams selected for the playoffs, and I've agreed with all 28.
I do want to
every year,
and I hope I didn't sound like I think Notre Dame should be an undefeated Cincinnati. I meant one loss. Pete asked one loss Cincinnati. So
yeah, right. Yeah, and this has
undefeated. There's no discussion.
This has nothing to do with Notre Dame and. This has nothing to do with where Notre Dame's ranked or anything along those lines. Because as soon as we start making definitive statements like this, then people on the outside say, well, you're just saying that because, and then tie it into a Notre Dame situation. And it has nothing to do with Notre Dame. I don't think that this should happen. I realize that as long as they get the right four at the end of the year, that's all that matters. We're veering off this topic, and we got to get back to the remaining questions. And did I ask the RB Irish question?
No,
nope. Didn't. You have to pick one team in the top nine to lose this weekend. Who is it?
What do we want to accomplish out of this? Comedy?
Or, I don't know. Let me
benefits.
Let me real quickly tell you who each one is playing. Georgia's at Tennessee. Alabama's playing New Mexico State. Oregon's playing Washington State. Ohio State's playing Purdue. Cincinnati's at South Florida. Michigan's at Penn State. Michigan State hosts Maryland. Oklahoma's the only one of the top 10 that's playing a ranked team, and they're at Baylor, number 13. Notre Dame's at Virginia, and Oklahoma State's playing TCU.
There's two that I want to happen, and there's this one that
is
I think
about,
will.
Yes. So now this is about Notre Dame and what benefits Notre Dame the most.
Okay. The one I think will happen, or I had to take one to happen. I don't know if Michigan Penn State counts because it's a 1-point spread, but I think Baylor is going to get Oklahoma.
If they the don't,
one I, the one I want to will. Happen is who do you say Alabama's playing?
New Mexico State.
I want that one to happen. Because that would be awesome.
And number two
would be, it would be really funny if Purdue wins again.
Well, and then this ties into, let's say, and it's not going to happen. Let's say South Florida beats Cincinnati. So Cincinnati has defeated Notre Dame. And
they
Cincinnati
are way
just
behind
lost
Notre
to South
Dame.
Florida.
They're way behind Notre Dame. They fall way behind Notre Dame. They plummet.
I think that they would.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that they would too, even though we just spent...
Right.
And it's on
exactly
the logic of that.
Exactly. So I'm being a little bit hypocritical, but
best win for Notre Dame would be Purdue over Ohio State. Because it would really throw some gas on the fire of the SEC championship game. Georgia losing to Tennessee, I think, would be really interesting because then everybody would feel a little bit vulnerable. And right now, mm-hmm. like Georgia is sort of viewed as like a team in sort of party of one right now.
Yeah, really good question by RBI Irish. And we're going to wrap up before we make our predictions with the Irish Rover. And that is, if Notre Dame beats Virginia, should Irish fans start making travel plans to Atlanta or Glendale? I'm ready. I'm ready to pull the trigger if Notre Dame beats Virginia.
I win either way.
right, Pete? I mean, there's no doubt about it.
I would say neither. What you need to do is, does Cincinnati make the playoff or not? That ultimately is what's going to decide where Notre Dame goes. If Cincinnati makes the playoff, Notre Dame, I think, will almost certainly go to the Fiesta Bowl. If Cincinnati misses the playoff, Cincinnati goes to the Fiesta Bowl. Notre Dame wouldn't get a rematch with them. Then it would go to Atlanta. So if you want Notre Dame to play the best opponent possible, other than Ohio State, and for O'Malley's delicate sensibilities, then you want Cincinnati to make the playoff, Notre Dame to go to the Fiesta Bowl, and then they could end up with like a Michigan or Michigan State.
What Pete said, I need Purdue to do some dirty work. Keep the Buckeyes out of my life.
So Notre Dame beating Virginia doesn't actually answer the question.
No. I mean, Notre Dame losing to Virginia would, though.
Yeah. And why don't you go ahead and share what you believe will happen there?
So I think that there's a perception out there that if Notre Dame falls out of the New Year's Six entirely, that they have to go to either the Cheez-It Bowl, formerly the Camping World Bowl, formerly the Champ Sports Bowl, or the Gator Bowl, so Orlando or Jacksonville, which is not actually true. I talked to people at the Holiday Bowl, and they said that they have every bit, so they're in the same tier as the Gator and the Cheez-It Bowl in terms of selection process for the ACC after the playoff. So I haven't talked to people at Notre Dame about this, but I could almost guarantee you that they would prefer to go to San Diego over Florida for a third bowl in 5 years, as O'Malley raising his hand would also prefer that.
Yes.
So that would draw Notre Dame against Pac-12 number three, which would be, you know, kind of an Arizona State or a UCLA, not a terrible brand to play against. So if they're out of the New Year's Six, could be San Diego. Don't worry about it. They don't play at Qualcomm Park anymore. That doesn't exist. They actually play downtown at the Padres baseball stadium.
But did they tear that down? They should have. They tore it down?
Yeah. Oh, it's been torn down for a couple of years.
I thought they were in the process of tearing it down when we went there. For the Navy game. No, I mean the condition that it was in at the time.
Hopefully they saved that scoreboard for and repurposed it for future use.
And I'm not one to like criticize facilities because they cost a lot to build, and I realize that, but that place was an absolute dump. All right. On that note, predictions for this weekend. Notre Dame at Virginia.
I'd rather cover Notre Dame Navy at a high school field in San Diego than worry about anything. I'm happy to cover it in Qualcomm again as it has been raised.
Wow, true.
Just send me back out there.
Everybody, yes.
Parking lot.
We would all love another trip to San Diego, no doubt about it. Predictions?
This is made with Brennan Armstrong starting and playing, but not having some miraculous recovery where he no longer has a cracked rib. I had Notre Dame 42, Virginia 34. I think Virginia will score a lot. I think they will put up a bunch of yards. And I think if Notre Dame had not figured out itself offensively, I think Notre Dame would lose this game. I think if Brennan Armstrong was 100% and had not been injured, I think Notre Dame would lose this game. But for Notre Dame's benefit, both of those things have happened. They figured out themselves offensively, and Brennan Armstrong isn't going to be 100%. So, I think Notre Dame will be efficient and get over the line, which is their last major hurdle of the season. So 42-34 Notre Dame points.
As I have said a few times, this was my Notre Dame's one loss I had predicted for the season, and it was because of Brennan Armstrong and all these wide receivers running around. It was also in place because I thought they'd be undefeated and there'd be a lot more pressure, and everybody's like, well, how could an undefeated team lose out there? That's when teams lose, when you're not supposed to lose, and all the pressure's on you. That's how teams lose. So I don't think Armstrong can be Brennan Armstrong. He won't be able to run well enough. And more importantly, Pete, you made a great point that Notre Dame has found their offense. This is, if Notre Dame doesn't score in the 40s, something went wrong, or they decided they were going to have 2 6-minute touchdown drives that work out. I have Notre Dame 45, Virginia 35. I wouldn't go lower on the score. I would only go higher. The only thing that gives me cause for pause that they don't add up to 80 points that way. Sometimes these opening drives by Notre Dame, they're just, they can move the ball and not score a la Cincinnati. And that is what could keep Virginia in this game, is if you're moving down the ball, if you pull a Cincinnati to start this game, then we're in for a long one.
Okay, does Virginia have Ahmad Gardner or no?
Well, no, I'm adding, it didn't say 17-13. I said 45-35.
Yeah.
No, they do not have Ahmad Gardner. And, of course, my prediction will be on Friday. And, wow, that 45-35. And you're, O'Malley, you're assuming, like you're saying that,
he can play and throw.
Armstrong plays.
And throw, play and throw. If he can't play, it's going to be Notre Dame 42, Virginia 21.
Okay. Well, I
don't feel like I need to make two predictions, so I'm going to stick with my first one.
Okay. Well, I almost feel like I have to in tomorrow's preview, but we'll see. We'll make that decision when the time comes. But we appreciate you joining us for Irish Illustrated Insider, O'Malley and Priester pregame when Notre Dame takes on Virginia in Scott Stadium Saturday evening.
Thank you for listening to the Irish Illustrated Insider Podcast. If you enjoy our coverage of Notre Dame football, please consider supporting the podcast with a small donation. Go to irishillustrated.com/support. Your support will help Irish Illustrated continue to be the leader in coverage of Notre Dame athletics.